This is Jason Waller, America's true underdog. We've got a podcast for you. Inspiration, motivation, anything to overcome adversity. We've got stories from real, raw entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, normal folks, you name it, we've got it. We want to share the stories of people breaking down the wall and finding a way to achieve success. Visit us at trueunderdog.com and be inspired. Bam! Bam!
Hi, this is Megan.
How you feeling, girl?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. I know you were down in the weather about a couple of weeks ago, but man, I'm just sitting there going, okay, hopefully she's all rocked out. We're ready to go here.
Good to go. That sounds like you're all rock and roll.
Well, you know how we creative people are. We all live off from this energy, and when something gets in the way, it's like, no. My creative energy,
yes,
you know, has got to always show up. Is it the same way for an author?
Definitely. Yeah, I think that plays a big part in my kind of everyday life, especially in a time like this when things are so bizarre.
I was going to ask you, how is that affecting your writing? And the reason why I bring that up is because I've talked with a lot of creative people that are going, well, I'm just going to sit back and just let life happen. And I'm going, but you're a creative person. This is, wow, the perfect blank canvas.
Yeah, I think that I've been a little low-key lately, just naturally. I just finished a book and got through the whole editing process with that. So I need a little time to decompress. And this is kind of the perfect time to do that and just kind of binge Netflix and see if anything comes to me. And if it does, then pick up the pen, you know?
When you go through that editing process and you're also on the other side of the coin, you've got to promote a process and then Mother Nature standing in the way with something. What does that do for you as a person?
That's a good question. Well, I end up eating a lot of chocolate and listening to good music. And I think it's a really good time to reflect on what we want out of life, humans as a species in general, how destructive we are. There's a lot that comes into it in a time like this. And I think it can be easy to get a little bit sad and to dwell in the fact that we don't really treat the planet well. And I go there in my mind relatively often. So yeah, just trying to stay optimistic. And
well, you talk about, you know, listening to music and stuff like that, and I'm not going to lie to you, I've done the same thing over the past week and a half. What are you jumping into? Because I, for some stupid reason, I seem to be levitating toward classic rock.
Oh, nice. I'm listening to a lot of Johnny Cash right now.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I love him. I just feel like his message in general is perfect for this kind of time. So how about you? What have you been listening to?
Oh, my
to?
God. You say Johnny Cash. I mean, I was up in Billings, Montana, and Johnny would always come cruising into town at the fair every single year.
So cool. Lucky you. And I'm sure you have some stories.
Oh, my God. Just the way that man would get up there and say, hello, I'm Johnny Cash. And then my dad, who was, you know, a sergeant in the Army, he would like freak out like a little groupie. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, that is so cool. I would have freaked out. I consider myself a groupie even now.
Well, your new book is called The Meat Hunter. Now, if we're going to judge a book by its cover, you already win. Automatic win.
Thank you. I do love the cover. I think it's really dramatic. And I'm a fan of it.
Did you get to participate with that? Or is that one of those where you have to relinquish control to the actual publisher and you go, I'll go with it.
I do have to relinquish control. They definitely ask for my opinion, but at the end of the day, it's not up to me. So, you know, I'll give them my say, but they don't always listen to me.
So now what is it with your writing style where I actually took notes during the reading and I said, man, she's a storyteller as well as an educator. That's two completely different people you're putting on that page.
Thank you. That's very sweet to say. Yeah, I guess I should probably start by just saying like a little bit about the book since your listeners probably haven't read it yet. But it's a thriller, but I like to call it a thriller with a social conscience because it focuses heavily like not only on entertaining and fulfilling that kind of suspenseful, unnerving aspect of thrillers that we all kind of expect, but also on peering inside the American meat industry and the many horrors that reside there. And my protagonist is a young woman who was raised on a farm, and she watched her father casually executing pigs for the whole of her childhood ones who she considered close friends. So as an adult, she's in the animal pharmaceutical company, and she's out for vengeance against those who she considers to be the cruelest members of the meat industry. And she's incredibly cunning and sexy, but also kind. You know, in the moment, she's not shooting someone in the stomach.
But I could so relate with the story, only because, you know, once again, from being from Montana, I mean, we had to we had to do what we had to do with the chickens and the rabbits and all that kind of stuff. And I got to be honest with you, it never sat well in my heart. To this day, I have a forest here in South Charlotte, North Carolina, where we have 12 deer. And it's like I'm out there to protect those deer every single day.
Oh, that's amazing. I love hearing that. Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. Like, my dad raised me to treat living beings kindly. And I think that that actually is quite intrinsic in us all. Like, I mean, if you hand a 5-year-old a bunny, he's going to pet and love that bunny. He's not going to ask his mom for a knife, you know? And I think that...
Oh my God, that was good.
I really think that animal cruelty is kind of the only part of ordinary everyday life I can think of that we kind of stubbornly and adamantly refuse to examine because it's simply too painful. Like you're saying, you know, we're kind of protectors of animals, any that cross our paths, at least. So it's far easier to pretend it's not happening. But the reality is that there are billions of animals slaughtered every year for us to eat. And we also know that, or at least I think it's relatively common knowledge now, that well over 99% of them were not treated kindly before reaching our plates. And this becomes especially interesting when we acknowledge that we're the ones who endorse this every day with our purchases. And I would actually argue that that's precisely why it's so painful, because the irony and the hypocrisy comes in when you also acknowledge that we love animals, like you're talking about. Yeah. And, you know, so I always ask people, like, can you imagine sitting through a movie like Saw, for example, if the character is tortured and brutalized in the most disturbing ways imaginable, were animals, like even if they were CGI or you knew they weren't being butchered in real life,
right,
you still manage to sit there and watch it? Or would you say, what kind of sick joke is this, and storm out of the theater? Because our natural inclination is
That is so interesting you say that, because the new Harrison Ford movie, Call of the Wild, or Call to the Wild, every one of those dogs were animated, and I felt like I saw more dog cruelty in an animated motion picture. That does not give you permission to let those dogs fight and take after each other.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I haven't seen that, actually, but I should, now that you mention it.
So now, when you put it all down on paper and stuff like that, how do you take, you know, the hoggers and stuff like that in doing what they're doing and not, you know, grotesque it? How do you keep it moving forward without the reader going, I'm out of here?
Yeah, it's actually a dilemma that I have trouble with sometimes, because I feel like throughout my life as a creative writer, I've been taught to show, not tell. And I've kind of intuitively understood that crafting a fictional world that comes alive, that guides the reader into pockets of the mind where they're forced, or maybe inspired is a better word, inspired to reflect on how they feel, is immeasurably better than telling them how to feel. So when I paint a picture, I try not to stray from the truth. So sometimes that means painting a gruesome image. And with this work in particular, because one of my intentions is to explore parts of an industry that we'd really prefer be kept hidden, I really try to show readers the truth. And I think it's important that we're made to feel uncomfortable, because it's really our own actions and our dollar that's creating the situation that makes us so uncomfortable and mad and sickened in this case. And we need to face that. So yeah, I always say, like, it's easy to go to the supermarket and pick out a big turkey for Thanksgiving, but if you were sent to the barn with a hatchet instead, there probably wouldn't be a turkey on the table that year for you and for me.
Not gonna happen. Yeah.
So I feel like a little gore is necessary once in a while to kind of open our eyes to things that we wouldn't explore on our own.
The book we're talking about is The Meat Hunter. This is your very first book. Okay, so now I know what happened to me after my first two books, which were very kind of new age religion motivational books, and I got typecast into that when, in fact, I like writing novels. What about you? I mean, what is your thing, and how are you preparing for that next one and everything that follows?
Well, this is actually my second book.
Oh, good for you.
I do feel like this is kind of the genre that I fit into and the world that I want to be a part of, which is a good thing. But yeah, my first book, The Slave Players, caused a massive uproar among the KKK, actually.
Oh my God. Really?
I know.
Oh, let's mess around with that small group,
you?
Huh?
Yeah, The Grand Wizard, which is what he calls himself, probably endearingly, I guess, physically ripped apart my book on camera and went into this disgusting diatribe about me that you would expect from someone in the KKK. It was a book that looked at slavery and racism in the South, and he took issue with it.
Wow. So when you catch a vibe like that, do you just sit back and say, what am I going to do? Or do you go, hey, thanks for your opinion, man. My next book comes out in a few weeks. I'm looking forward to hearing your response as well.
It was such a surreal experience. It's one of those things where you like don't know that it's on your bucket list or that it should have been on your bucket list until it happens. And then you like piss off the Imperial Wizard of the KKK.
So now what didn't make it to the final edit? Because you know what it's like when you put it all down on paper and you go through your personal edit and then it's got to go to the big guys. And so what didn't make it that maybe, you know, could become an inspiration to a different book?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. You know, I'm very much an edit as I go kind of writer. I pretty meticulously go through a chapter and make sure that it's what I want before I move on to the next. And I know that's different to a lot of people's experience and process. But yeah, so I kind of do my editing as I'm writing. And then of course, when it gets sent to my agent initially, she comes back with suggestions and then we kind of pick it apart together. And mainly it's cutting out pieces that I'm like, oh yeah, you know, you're right. This doesn't necessarily need to be here, but I love it so much, so I'm gonna store it on my desktop and hopefully be able to use it in some future work. But you just never know. I'm sure that it's similar for you. You're a writer as well.
Well, yeah, the writing plus on top of that, I got used to that with my 41 years of broadcasting, because you would have to go into a room and sit with your program directors and your consultants, and then they would tell you how bad you sucked, and you would sit there and go, ah, that's fine, man. That's okay. That I know what I'm doing. So if I don't agree with you, then we'll part ways. But okay, whatever.
I love that. Yeah, you have to get used to people thinking that you suck, you know, in this industry.
So here's the big thing. We're here in 2020 and podcasting with books going onto those podcasts with 12, 15 different episodes is a hot thing. Are we going to see The Meat Hunter turned into a 12 episode podcast?
Oh gosh, that would be great. I haven't considered it, but I would definitely be open to that. I would love to see it as a Netflix series. That's my ultimate dream. That's like my fantasy, but you know.
And yet you're such a vivid writer. Do you not have that fear that, okay, I write this way. Like you said, I paint the picture this way. Mm-hmm. You think there's a cameraman out there that can capture what you've put inside my imagination as a reader?
I would hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think that I personally love films, and I sometimes gravitate toward films even more so than I do literature. And I think also it includes a wider audience than books, you know, both working together, films and literature, you can really like capture the whole world. Mm-hmm. So that would be amazing.
Do you ever feel like the seed? It starts with you and it's like, okay, okay, here's my first leaf. Let it go. Everybody else gets it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, definitely. It's like, here's the starting point. Here's the idea. And then it takes a village, you know, and I could never do what people who make films do. And whole different creative energy. And we work together to create it.
Well, the one thing that you've done with The Meat Hunter is that you've created your own voice through your writing. Now, is that writer the has it been screaming to have a stage the entire way? And if so, what is that stage that you're going to go to next? Because it can't be just pages in a book all the time. There's got to be something inside your imagination. Are we going to see an album for you filled with music? There's something that's waiting to happen.
Oh, gosh, putting some pressure on me there.
Yeah.
I think I'll stick to books right now. I think I definitely consider myself a bit of an activist, and I kind of channel that into my writing as well. So yeah, I think anytime we're standing up against mainstream society and defending either people or animals who aren't treated fairly, we're acting as activists. So I kind of try to include that in my writing.
Oh my God, Miss Activist. I can't wait to read what you've got, you know, written down in the future because of all the things that are happening right now, because there's going to be so much change and challenge that they're going to need an activist like yourself to put it into those paragraphs.
Yeah. Well, we need loads of activists right now.
Absolutely. Where's the best place for someone to find out more information about you, Megan? Because, you know, you totally deserve to be loved, followed, and supported all the way.
Thank you. Well, I have a website. It's MissMeganAllen.com. And I also have an Instagram, which is Miss Megan Allen. And so, yeah, people can reach me there. Can give out my phone number. People can text me, FaceTime, WhatsApp.
It's about the total connection, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you can come back to the show anytime in the future. The door is always going to be open for you, Miss Megan.
You're going to regret saying that. No. I'm going to call tomorrow.
Oh my God.
I have a lot of time on my hands.
Do you know how many times I've talked with Joe Elliott from Def Leppard? Eight times. Get that Arrow
so cool.
on the phone. Get Arrow. Okay. We got a new album. Get Arrow on the phone.
Well, I want to be on next when one of those cooler people than me is on at the same time so that I can.
Let me ask you a question. Okay, would you know what to say? Only because, you know, I put so much show prep into what's going on and stuff like that. If you were to get on there and talk, I think the only time that I ever froze was with Brian May of Queen. And the only reason why I froze is because I heard his voice. I went, oh my God.
It's really him.
It's not an imposter.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would sound like a babbling idiot. I would just be silent. I'd be silent and I would just bask in it.
Well, come back anytime in the future. The door is always going to be open for you.
Thank you so much. This was lovely talking to you.
You be brilliant today, okay?
Thank you very much. Okay, have a great day.
Damn, true underdog. Damn, unleash the power.
This is Jason Waller, America's true underdog. We've got a podcast for you. Inspiration, motivation, anything to overcome adversity. We've got stories from real, raw entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, normal folks, you name it, we've got it. We want to share the stories of people breaking down the wall and finding a way to achieve success. Visit us at trueunderdog.com and be inspired. Bam! Bam!